Good to see you both this morning. My name's Matt, I'm one of the church staff. This morning, I was going to be speaking on James chapter 4 as part of our series on that book, but we've made a bit of a change. We're going to talk about the coronavirus. I'm glad you're delighted to be here. Many questions to wrestle through. Honestly, this is serious. I want to speak on this today. If you switch on your TV at the moment and you see any footage of the empty supermarket shelves as the panic buying sweeps the nation, you might be thinking, what's going on? Why people need so much toilet paper? I have no idea. It's not even that sort of virus. We hear about governments and nations around the world scrambling to respond in all sorts of ways. The strengths and weaknesses of different health systems are being exposed. And naturally, we might be asking, will I be okay? Will my children be okay? My parents, my grandparents? Will I still be able to go to work or go on holiday? Will my kids' school be closed? And how will I look after them if it is? Will my employer or my own business survive whatever is to come? You may look at what our government is doing and think that it's too much. You might think that it's too little. I'm sure it will be debated for months to come. All the stats so far suggest that the coronavirus leaves over 95% of its victims still breathing, even in the worst places. But it leaves many more members of society afraid, anxious, isolated, perhaps alone, and maybe wondering if anybody would even notice if they were gone. In a culture with an existing climate of individualism, the coronavirus could rapidly mutate into an epidemic of despair. Without work or school or public gatherings, sports, hobbies, or even the outside world at all for many people, humans don't do very well. We need the moral and mental and practical support of communities to live. So how do we respond as individuals and as a church? The situation and the needs may or may not change, even in the next 24 hours. I've got 10 things to say today, and unusually for me, I'm going to pick out bits from around the Bible because I believe it has wisdom for us in every situation. Nothing I'm going to say this morning is rocket science, but there might be one or two things that you personally need to remember out of this in particular. And it's worth remembering this too. Quite a lot of the Bible was written not in sort of ivory-towered theological libraries, but in the middle of high-stakes crisis situations. It is normal, if you look back on history, it's normal for crises to happen and for God to call his people to respond in the right way. That's normal, historically speaking. So 10 thoughts. You can see from the graphics this was cobbled together yesterday evening, okay? Don't judge me. First thought, be sensible. As Christians, we should be the first advocates of rational, well-considered common sense. We believe in a God who is personal, intelligent, thoughtful, and ordered. Obviously, we should listen to all the basic stuff around hand-washing, using sanitizer, so on. If you need to follow the advice to self-isolate, then do. Be aware of the reality of your own health, whatever that may be. The truth is your friend. If you have any of the symptoms, or for any reason you might be more vulnerable, don't deny the facts. Do what is needed to be safe and keep other people safe. There is nothing heroic about being around other people if you're sick or you have the symptoms that you could pass on to somebody more vulnerable. There is nothing heroic or Christian about doing that. Making sensible decisions does not mean that you lack faith. Quite the opposite, in fact. So be sensible. Secondly, be humble. One of the dynamics of this sort of situation is that it's a very powerful reminder of our reality. Unless anybody in this room is an epidemiologist, and I don't think anybody is, you don't know best. You don't know best. And neither do I. My wife is a GP, many of you will know that. She has 10 years of medical training, and she doesn't know what to think or advise right now. She will readily say that she's not an expert on this. Even the people that are experts don't have all the answers right now. So this is a moment to be aware of your own finiteness and lack of insight. As with many things, everyone is likely to think that their own opinion is the most reasonable, balanced one, and everybody else is either too conservative or too paranoid, and you're the sensible, reasonable one in the middle. Everybody thinks that about their own opinion. So we are wise to follow the advice of health experts and presume our own ignorance. As Christians, we don't build our identity on feeling like we know better than everybody else or that we're really clever and ahead of the curve. We can ignore all of that and hopefully be level-headed and humble when we think about this sort of situation. A crisis always shows up what a person's true character really is. Let's choose to have a leading edge of humility. Let that be our character in a time of crisis. Third thought, be gracious. This situation is completely unprecedented for everyone. In the New Testament, there's a letter written by a leader called Paul to a young church leader called Timothy, and Paul advises him this. He says, First of all, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgiving be made for people, for all people, for kings and all who are in high positions, that we may lead a peaceful and quiet life, godly and dignified in every way. So Paul encourages Timothy, pray for leaders, people in high positions, not just for their own sake, but in order that all people can live a peaceful and quiet life. This is really pressing right now. When you pray for a leader, especially with thankfulness, it puts things into perspective. I'm really glad I'm not the person having to make countrywide decisions right now. But somebody has to. So let's be gracious and not complain. We might not agree with every decision that affects us, but let's start by acknowledging it's difficult. It is difficult for the powers that be to make decisions around this. Thinking internally as a church, I also want to ask you to be gracious with myself and other church leaders. Our elders, directors, and trustees spent a fair bit of yesterday communicating by WhatsApp about what we should do even today. We are invested in the church, we're trying to make good decisions, and we might get them wrong, and we might get the communication wrong. We're working it out as we go, so please do be gracious. Don't assume that any decision has been made lightly. It won't have been. Let's also be gracious to anybody who is particularly stressed about what's happening, and therefore might be a bit short-tempered or grumpy or just a bit low. If people around us are panic buying, we might feel a bit irritated, but just pause and consider the underlying reason. They're afraid. They're afraid. And we should be gracious to anybody who is possessed by fear. Fourth, be listening. The news seems to be telling us something new every couple of hours at the moment. That gives us plenty of things to pray about and think about and think about how we change what we're doing practically. Please be on the lookout for church communication as things develop. In particular, do check your email or your phone before you come to anything. It's hard to stay on top of communication at the best of times, but if you check the means of communication that you have at your disposal, you're less likely to miss important things. As I said, everything is subject to change in the coming weeks. We have no idea what will and won't be wise, even next Sunday. So just watch your communication. But most importantly, take the time to listen to anybody who needs it, whether they're afraid or living alone, maybe they're vulnerable to this virus, they're not sure what to do. Be a blessing simply by listening to them. However, let's also be careful about who we listen to for information. Some people delight in whipping up hysteria, especially some of the media. Others are motivated not by the good of other people, but by the desire to benefit themselves. Another bit of Paul's advice to young Timothy was this: refuse foolish and ignorant speculations, knowing that they produce quarrels. Refuse foolish and ignorant speculations, knowing they produce quarrels. You'll get yourself into a mess if you listen to people who don't know what they're talking about. You'll get stressed and upset. Just avoid it. So let's listen, but let's be careful about whose thoughts we actually follow. Fifth, be flexible. Because things are developing all the time, we don't know what the implications will be. This is not just for church, this is going to be for daily life. If you're an employer, think about how you can be flexible for your employees who might have to suddenly deal with school closures or supporting relatives at short notice. If you're an employee, think about how you can help your employer who might be worried about whether they can continue in business and how they can pay the bills in the coming months. When Paul wrote another letter to the church in Ephesus, one thing he said was this: be patient, bearing with one another in love. He anticipated that Christians in local churches sometimes would have to put up with each other. He was very pragmatic. Be tolerant and forgiving and patient. And how much more do we need that advice when everyday expectations are disrupted and things are different? As a church, we might have to make decisions not to do things at very short notice based on the news that has literally come out in the last hour. We're going to have to be flexible. I spent a number of hours this week preparing a talk I'm now not using this morning. It's a bit annoying, but worse things can happen, obviously. I've just got to be flexible. But I want to encourage all of us to be flexible. If the gathering or the event you were looking forward to has to be cancelled, even at short notice, please have a good attitude. Don't grumble and complain. 6, be committed. Even if we can't do church like this for a short season, which seems like it might be possible, we're still church. We're still church. The New Testament book we call Hebrews, we don't know who wrote it, but it has this great line. It says, "And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near." The author is saying, it's normal for Christians to gather, and we will continue to gather in whatever form we're able to do, whether it's in smaller groups like partnership groups or whatever we need to make it work. But however we meet, the point is to stir up one another to love and good works and to encourage each other. That really focuses the mind. We have a purpose. Even if we can only meet in smaller groups or even if we can't see each other, we can pray, we can ring, we can email, we can give to those in need, but with a goal. We are not a social club. We are a people called by God to need and support one another to grow. And with reason, when that line I quoted says, "the day drawing near," the author is reminding us of a theme that comes up throughout the Bible. One day everything will end. God will judge all things. And it's worth living in readiness for that day. We're not supposed to be passive towards what's happening around us in the world. So please remember, if you follow Jesus, if you follow him, you are part of God's universal church with no ifs or buts. You just are. So let's stay committed to each other in all the ways that we can in the weeks ahead. 7th thought, be outward. We may have a huge opportunity in the coming weeks to rely on and talk about our faith in a context where things that previously seemed very certain and unchangeable are no longer. We can respond in ways that are greater than just being studious users of soap. Our complacent materialistic society is deeply unsettled right now. People will be asking questions. It's a good time to talk about why we follow Jesus and demonstrate that by following him, we can be radically self-sacrificial. The author Rodney Stark, in his book, The Rise of Christianity, describes how the first Christians responded to the world's problems. And he says this: Christianity revitalized life in the Greco-Roman cities by providing new norms and new kinds of social relationships, able to cope with many urgent problems. To cities filled with homeless and the impoverished, Christianity offered charity as well as hope. To cities filled with newcomers and strangers, Christianity offered an immediate basis for attachment. To cities filled with orphans and widows, Christianity provided a new and expanded family. To cities torn by violent strife, Christianity offered a new basis for social solidarity. And to cities faced with epidemics, fires and earthquakes, Christianity offered effective nursing services. And Stark goes on to look at the response of the early church to the plagues that came into Rome, which were devastating. But actually, that incident was integral to the growth of the church. And he quotes the bishop Dionysius, one of the early leaders. And Dionysius said this: "Most of our brother Christians show unbounded love and loyalty, never sparing themselves and thinking only of one another. Heedless of danger, they took charge of the sick, attending to their every need and ministering to them in Christ. And with them departed this life serenely happy. For they were infected by others with the disease, drawing on themselves the sickness of their neighbours and cheerfully accepting their pains. Many, in nursing and curing others, transferred their death to themselves and died in their stead." This is radical stuff. Dionysius is basically saying that Christians were so committed to the care of others that in looking after them, they got sick themselves and effectively died in their place. That's what happened. And it radically led to the growth of the church in that time. Very, very challenging example. I hope it won't come to anything like this. But the point is, what a different perspective on life. What a different way of seeing things. In a time where many people are already isolated, the wonderful NHS, as it is being totally overwhelmed, and there's nowhere else to look for many people, maybe there are opportunities for us to serve in ways that we haven't before. Maybe there are ways we can demonstrate the love of God that will suddenly become possible and may be very costly to us. Keep your eyes and ears open for those opportunities. And eighth, be opportunistic. It's possible that today is the last time we're going to be able to meet like this for a little while. It might be a week or two, it might be longer. We have absolutely no idea. And that might be down to a government decree that tells us that we have to do it, or it might be that we decide it's the wisest move. Don't know. And it might be that we can't gather like this in worship, so we have to do faith differently for a season. And do you know what? That might not be the worst thing. There might be a lot of good from that. If we're not meeting in big groups like on a Sunday, or maybe some of the things that we do in the week are not anymore, that will free up time and energy for many of us. So the question is, what opportunity does that give you to grow your faith in a way that you normally struggle to have time for? This might be a great opportunity to read more deeply, to reflect on things more, to pray more, to develop better daily habits, maybe even to have a bit of rest. Maybe taking each day as it comes will be a helpful spiritual discipline for many of us. 9, be available. We don't know how extensive the effects of this virus will be. Certainly, it will affect mental health. It will affect the physical health of anyone who gets very sick. It might make certain practical things very difficult for people. So think about how you can be available, assuming that you're able to do so yourself. It might be that you check on your neighbour who lives alone. If you know a person who is self-isolating, it might be that you can help them get some supplies. If you know a single parent family where the kids are off school for a bit, the grown-up involved might appreciate the offer of some support. And 10, be faithful. Whatever we do practically, this is an opportunity to faithfully trust God, to put your money where your mouth is, so to say. When Paul wrote yet another letter to the church in Philippi, he said this curious and amazing thing. He said, "I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in every and any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength." Being content in every situation sounds wonderful, doesn't it? And Paul knew some bad situations. Some people read this and they think there must have been some big special secret that was hidden about being content. But Paul actually tells us what it was. He says he can do this through him who gives me strength. It's God. Paul's faith has a transformative effect on his attitude. I like to call this being immune to circumstances. You can't be immune to the coronavirus just yet, but you can have a faith that makes you immune to circumstances. Just think, if we were content in all situations, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be a good thing? So let's continue to trust God. The virus is no surprise to him. Somehow he will bring good things out of this, many of which we will never hear about or know about, but he will. Over the top of all of these 10 things, let's be prayerful. We may face a time of mourning. It might be the loss of a friend or a family member. But somehow in mourning, Jesus will comfort us with hope that creation and people will not always be broken. A new creation where sickness and death are no more is one day coming. But until that time, we pray, we mourn, we love, we endure, and we hope as appropriate. So let's pray to God for comfort for ourselves and those around us. But I want to say let's particularly pray for those in some other countries. Most of the news reporting that we get will be focused on the UK and the rest of Europe. But if the coronavirus really takes hold in some of the world's poorest countries, that's where the most suffering is likely to be. I picture what might happen in Syria or Yemen, for example, with everything else that's happening in those places, and it's horrifying. Or think about the 65 million refugees in the world right now with limited access to good sanitation or healthcare. Let's make it a priority to pray for people who are likely to be forgotten. So 10 things to take on board. We have no idea what's going to happen in the coming weeks, but we know God can be trusted. Why do we know this? Because Jesus was the original self-isolator. On the cross that he died on, out of love for us, he became isolated from his people, isolated from his Father, isolated from comfort, isolated from everything good, so that we would never need to experience complete isolation ever again, so that we could always draw close to God. And anyone who would do that for you is worth trusting through any fire or earthquake or epidemic. I want to close by briefly praying. And these are some verses, these are from Numbers 6 in the Old Testament, and this is a traditional Jewish prayer of blessing that's been used for thousands of years. So I'd like to ask you to stand, if you're able, and I'm going to read this slowly over all of us, but then I'd like all of us to read it over one another afterwards, if that's okay. May the Lord bless and protect you. May the Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. May the Lord look with favor on you and give you peace. May the Lord bless you and protect you. May the Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. May the Lord look with favor on you and give you peace.